This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. 30 years ago, the education law known as Title IX banned discrimination in education based on sex, and today nearly all public schools and academic classes are coeducational. Last week, the Bush administration proposed changes that even some advocates describe as revolutionary. Regulations would be eased to allow both single-sex public schools and more single-sex classes within co-ed schools. Supporters say single-sex education provides a more supportive environment for both boys and girls and leads to better academic achievement. Critics say it endorses segregation and perpetuates sex stereotypes. In just a moment, an official from the Department of Education joins us, so if you have questions about what's exactly being proposed and why, give us a phone call, 800-989-8255, that's 800-989-TALK, or send us an email, TOTN@NPR.org. Later in the program, we'll hear from a critic and a supporter of same-sex education in public school. First, though, joining us from his office here in Washington is Ken Marcus. He oversees the Office for Civil Rights at the U.S. Department of Education. Welcome. Thanks for being with us this afternoon.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here. This is a very exciting time. There are certainly a lot of people who have been asking for more flexibility when it comes to single-sex education, so it's wonderful that we're finally in a position to be able to propose some new regulations.
So what are these new regulations? What changes does the administration want for Title IX?
Sure. There are two kinds of changes, first for single-sex classes and second for single-sex schools. Single-sex classes have been essentially prohibited for the last 30 years, except in very few exceptions like gym classes that involve bodily contact or choir or sex education. We are now providing a much broader range of the sorts of courses that can be provided if the school district can provide a substantial governmental interest, which could include a desire to provide a diversity of educational opportunities or a desire to meet the particular individualized needs of their students. Second, for public schools, those have been allowed, but under the current regulations, one can only provide a boys' school if one also provides a girls' school. Under the new proposed regulations, we would allow a single-sex school as long as the excluded sex is able to receive a substantially equal education in either a co-ed school or a single-sex school.
And again, these are proposed regulations. What we're in right now, as I understand it, is a 45-day period when you're gathering public comment.
That's right. We are just about to start a 45-day comment period. We welcome comments from anybody about the proposed regulations. They can send them to me at singlesexcomments@ed.gov. We do take public comments very seriously.
How do these regulations relate to the No Child Left Behind Act?
Well, that's a very good question. People have been making efforts to reform this area for at least a dozen years during successive administrations, and it's really been an effort by both Democrats and Republicans. The current effort began 2 years ago with No Child Left Behind when a bipartisan group of female senators, led by Kay Bailey Hutchinson, but also including Senator Hillary Clinton and Senator Barbara Mikulski and others, passed an amendment to No Child Left Behind, which had some interesting provisions. One provision required us to provide certain innovative funds for single-sex education, and the other provision required us to provide some clarification as to exactly what the law permitted when it came to single-sex education. The department did that in 2002, but at the same time that it provided that clarification, we also realized that, in fact, there was very little room, very little flexibility for school districts to offer this. And so what we indicated at that time was that we would develop new regulations that would provide a greater degree of flexibility. That's exactly what we're doing now.
And flexibility seems to be the key word here. None of this would mandate that any school system do any of this.
That's a good point. There's no mandate either with respect to the school districts or with respect to families, and I think that's an important point. No school district will be required to provide single-sex education, and in the event that a school district does provide it, no parent will be forced to send their children there. This has to be purely voluntary.
Is there a mechanism that's set up to review this to make sure that if, for example, there's a boys' school set up in a district and there is no girls' school, that they are getting equivalent kinds of opportunities in coeducational schools.
Yes, that's right. The proposed regulation does provide safeguards to ensure that boys and girls really are treated equally. And the details of that mechanism are one of the things that we would appreciate public comment on. But in general, the Office for Civil Rights at the Department of Education would review what's going on in terms of both any complaints that we receive as well as potentially our own proactive compliance reviews. And in the event that we get a complaint arguing that either boys are being treated better than girls or vice versa, we would look at any number of criteria to make sure that the districts really are treating both equally. So that, for example, we would look at the qualifications of the faculty and staff. We would look at the quality and accessibility of the facilities. We would look at the school books in terms of quality and availability. We might look at admissions criteria. We would look at everything from instruction to the facilities themselves to make sure that boys and girls are being treated equally. We want to emphasize to school districts that while we are providing more flexibility for educators to provide more options to parents, we are also providing an accountability mechanism to make sure that they're treating boys and girls substantially equally.
Well, let's hear from some callers, 800-989-8255, or email us, TOTN@npr.org. And Chris is with us from Sacramento, California.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
My first question actually has been rendered somewhat moot. I was going to inquire about, I'm 7 years removed from high school, already done college, and I recall that my experiences in high school where separating the sexes would be most effective would be more in the non-advanced placement classes. I found that the classes where students were a lot more serious, advanced placement, people weren't flirting, and it just they were more focused on their studies. But to hear about the flexibility, you know, that basically renders it moot. My second question is, are there any proposed changes to Title IX with respect to athletics?
Well, thank you for your question. Since you really are only asking the second part of that, I would say that the answer is no. We are not focused here on athletics, only on single-sex classes and schools. You may be aware that there was quite a bit of attention to the issue of Title IX athletics last year when Secretary Rod Page convened a commission to look at the way in which we were applying our Title IX regulations in the case of athletics. The commission essentially studied the issue at a number of town hall forums throughout the country and issued a report which resulted in a Dear Colleague letter from former Assistant Secretary Gerald Reynolds, which indicated that we would continue to aggressively enforce Title IX, but that we would, while using the three-part test, make sure to provide greater education and to indicate that each of the three prongs was a separate independent basis. That was generally what we did last year around on athletics. Right now the focus is on single-sex classes in schools.
Chris,
okay.
If you don't...
Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call, but if you don't mind, I'm going to follow up on that AP question of yours. If there are advanced placement or honors classes, would there be similar kinds of mechanisms to ensure that if they are same-sex, that they would be there would be equivalents provided elsewhere?
Yes, that's right. It's very important that if something like an AP course is offered for one sex, that it also be offered for the other sex. In some cases, that could be offered in a co-educational setting, but we would insist that if the higher-level courses are provided for one, it has to be provided for the other as well.
As a practical matter, there tend to be only one AP class per grade in most courses.
I would expect for most districts that would be the case.
Okay. Let's get another caller in. This is Joe, who's with us from Stockton, California.
Hi. I am a member of the organization, American Association of University Women, and our organization has studied single-sex academies, and our community of Stockton has also had single-sex academies. And the position of our organization is that the when we talk about single-sex academies being better for the sexes, we have found that the teaching methods that are used would be better used as integrated into a regular coeducational program. For instance, the type of questions that teachers ask boys are different than the kinds of questions they ask girls. And if they could integrate that kind of questioning in a co-ed classroom, both sexes do benefit from the intercourse between from both boys and girls.
Why don't we call it interchange?
Pardon me?
Never mind. Go ahead, Joe.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
That's quite all right. Go ahead.
Okay. We have had in Stockton single-sex academies, and they actually ended up, it was under a grant from the state of California, and they had quite a few problems with it. One of them was that the boys were chided for even entering a single-sex academy, and it was very hard to recruit boys for such, whereas girls were very anxious to participate in that. The teachers who taught in that, for instance, a science teacher, said that in presenting the same lessons to both the in the boys' academy and the girls' academy, boys were much more ready to accept facts without questioning them, whereas girls wanted to probe a lot more, ask a lot more questions.
Mm-hmm.
And they felt that knowing that, that when they went into their co-ed classrooms and allowed for girls to ask those probing questions instead of just accepting a right answer to a question, they learned a lot more about science, and it benefited everybody in the classroom.
Let's get a response from Ken Marcus.
Well, I want to thank you for calling in. The AAUW has been an important participant in this dialogue. There has been a great deal of debate at the level of academic research. AAUW has been a participant, and in fact, we cite the work of AAUW in our proposed regulation. This is an interesting and difficult area, and the research in the area is really in a developing phase. We've cited research from scholars on actually both sides of this, including, for instance, Cornelius Reardon of Providence College and his research indicating the benefits of single-sex education, as well as other scholars who also show that it has benefits, and the AAUW, which I know has a different perspective. Much of the research in this field demonstrates that there are educational benefits for both boys and girls of both races, particularly when it comes to boys and girls from lower-income families. But this is certainly an area where the research is at a relatively early stage, and for some reasons that are fairly easy to understand. The research, when it exists, is largely done outside of the United States or in a private school setting. There is still relatively little research in American public schools simply because there has been so little in the way of single-sex public education in the last 30 years. Our hope is that as districts respond to the new regulatory flexibility by providing new options, the research will catch up to it and we'll have a better sense of how single-sex education is able to benefit children, what children will benefit most from it, and how it can be used most effectively. At this point, I would say that there is essentially a debate on it. I think that there's perhaps a little bit more in the way of research indicating that it has favorable educational benefits, but I expect that there will be a lot more research to come.
Joe, thanks very much.
Well, thank you.
We just have a few seconds left with you, Ken Marcus, but when, if these, after this period of public comment, when would these regulations go into effect?
We're about to start a 45-day comment period, and the amount of time we'll need to analyze the comments is going to depend on the number and nature of the comments that we receive. But I imagine at any rate that it will be a few months down the road when we have perhaps final regulations.
And very quickly, do you anticipate any legal problems might this end up in court?
I don't expect what I would call legal problems, because we have been very careful in order to base our proposed regulations on the Supreme Court precedents that we've seen over the last few years. But that doesn't mean that people won't challenge us. There are certainly some advocacy groups that have indicated that they will probably sue. My hope is that they won't. I think that educational resources would best be used in other ways rather than in litigation. But if the department is sued, then I'm sure there will be an appropriate defense.
Ken Marcus, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ken Marcus oversees the Office for Civil Rights at the U.S. Department of Education. He was with us from his office here. More after a break. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the Bush administration's proposal to relax restrictions on single-sex public schools and single-sex academic classes. So if you went to an all-girls or all-boys school, what did you like or dislike about it? Do you think you missed out on anything? Would you send your child to a single-sex school? And if you teach in one, we'd like to hear about your experiences. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN at NPR.org. And joining us here in Studio 3A is David Sadker, professor of education at American University, co-author of Failing at Fairness. Good to have you on Talk of the Nation again.
Good to be here.
Now, you oppose single-sex education in public schools. Why?
Well, I'm for studying it and learning about it, but this proposal is doing everything pretty wrong. Number one, it's not using research. It's going ahead without research. I was a big advocate of single-sex schools and Failing at Fairness because I saw what they were doing. But what they were doing had nothing to do with the fact they were single-sex.
Mm-hmm. Well, we heard from Ken Marcus that there is, in fact, not a lot of research about single-sex education in public schools because they have been doing it for 30 years.
Well, and it's very mixed. And Title IX, people have to remember, is a civil rights law. 30 years ago, girls and boys got inferior education. If you look at today's public schools, you see a public school system divided by race, divided by class, and now with the notion of being divided by gender. There isn't research that says this is an appropriate answer. There is research that says a lot of what goes on in single-sex classes should go on in co-ed classes. For example, smaller classes, letting girls and boys talk freely, getting rid of sexual harassment. We have studies that show 4 out of 5 girls and almost as many boys are victims of sexual harassment. You don't get rid of that in a single-sex environment, but you could create a positive environment, and that's what we need to do.
So would you advocate then maybe some demonstration projects to develop
Perfect.
Some research?
We are so on the right channel right now. You don't open up to the nation and say to parents and children, you have some idea about a single-sex school, go for it. This is supposed to be an administration based on scientifically based evidence. There's nothing, the evidence isn't in on this. So what you do is you do everything they haven't done. You invest money, you train teachers, you look at selected schools, you see the lessons you learn, and you see if you can move it to co-ed schools. You know, it's nice to call it single-sex education, but it's really sex-segregated education. And when we had that 30 years ago, girls lost out, and I think boys lost out too. I think a democracy thrives when diversity lives in a classroom. And I think we all lose out when the classroom is all white or all male or all middle class.
Let's get some callers on the line. Kathy's with us from Georgetown, Colorado.
Well, I agree in almost in every way with this gentleman that just spoke. So all those reasons, but to share my experience, I'm 55. This wasn't a public school, but I had to leave a public school because I was harassed so badly by the football coach who was teaching history and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not really academically inclined, but I got through high school, and I started college, dropped out. Now I got a PhD in science about 15 years ago, and I attribute my ability to be able to do that and my to enjoy learning from being in a single school environment. We had plenty of access to boys after school. In terms of stereotyping girls, in some ways I think it probably gave me the opportunity to develop and to become I wish I was more mainstream many times than I am. So I don't think it really, I don't believe that it's going to stereotype girls. I think they're probably more stereotyped due to society's problems in a school with mixed, you know, with both boys and girls. About questioning that if the teachers just ask the right questions, that's great, but how much longer are girls going to have to pay for society's discrimination? I guess that's my response to several things that this gentleman has said. And
let's get a response.
Thank you very much. I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks for the call, Kathy. We appreciate it.
I think Kathy makes a great point. I think co-ed schools today are not doing the job they need to do, and that is because they need resources and training and some way to deal with boys and girls on an equitable level. That's not happening. And I think it can happen. I would love to look at single-sex schools and learn those lessons. And then I would love to train America's teachers. But just saying, imagine, look, this is the civil rights law. Imagine if we did it with race. We just said, you know, if you feel that somehow your particular race learns better together, go do it. That's what we're doing here with this. We're saying you could separate for no educational purpose. By the way, the Education Department is currently has a report on single-sex education that they have underway. The results of that report get issued next year. So you have to ask yourself, why are they doing it this year? And I think politics plays a role in it, and we can go there, but... Mm-hmm.
All right, here's an email question we have from Craig in Sebastopol, California. My instinct would be to reject this segregation. However, as the father of a girl in kindergarten and a volunteer in the classroom at her school, there are easily observable general differences between the way boys and girls interact within the classroom setting. Furthermore, I can imagine a scenario where both the boys and the girls would benefit from different approaches.
I think there are times where that may be the case. This is an exact example of how not to find that. California is a good example. California did this. They set up single-sex academies. The boys sent to the single-sex schools were sent there for disciplinary reasons. The teachers had no training, and that experiment collapsed in a few years. I think some single-sex schools in this program will work. I think some will be okay, and I think some will fail. I'm not sure I want to experiment with America's kids. Let's have a controlled experiment where we look at what works and what doesn't work. Let's not say civil rights laws don't have to apply anymore.
Let's go to Lori, and Lori's with us from Paducah, Kentucky.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
Our son is in sixth grade at the middle school here. It is a public school, and this is his first year in public school, and they do have a single-gender program here. They have, you know, one half of the sixth grade, the boys are in single-gender classrooms, the girls are in single-gender classrooms.
In all classes?
In all classes except band.
Okay.
And my husband and I both have had real mixed feelings about it. I'm a member of the AAUW, and, you know, so I was kind of like, well, I don't know what I think about this. Anecdotally, just for our son, it has, you know, we have seen it do really good things. It really facilitated his adjustment. He appreciates not having the distractions that can go with adolescent maturity issues.
or immaturity, depending on how you want to look at it. Yeah.
The whole boy-girl thing, he appreciates not having that as an issue. And so, you know, we have noticed that he has been able to focus more on his academics, and it's just, it has facilitated his transition to the new school.
David Sadker?
Well, you know, Title IX does allow single-sex classes, in spite of what Ken might have alluded to. If you have, I'll give you an example of what's totally permissible under Title IX. Boys need help in writing, they could have a single-sex class in writing. Girls need help in math or science, they can have a single-sex class in science. What this law does is open it up. It says parent preference, student preference. You have a notion? Go with it. We don't need evidence. We don't need training. And afterwards, we'll pick up the debris, and we'll see if it worked or not.
Yeah, and that was, you know, I mean, my husband is a psychologist, and we had some questions about that, you know, what... They are basing this on, you know, what evidence, what research, that sort of thing. So, you know, my point is that certainly I don't have generalizable evidence here, but, you know, in our situation, it has proven to be something positive. It is also something I think that is proving to be relatively expensive because they do have to have more teachers. And so there is a possibility for economic reasons alone that they may not be continuing the program.
Lori, thanks very much for the phone call. David
Sadker,
stay with us. We'll get back to you in a few minutes. But joining us now with a different point of view is Dr. Leonard Sachs, Executive Director of the National Association for Single-Sex Public Education. He's with us from his office in Montgomery County, Maryland. Good of you to be with us today.
Thanks for inviting me.
Obviously, you support the single-sex proposal in the name of your organization. Tell us why.
Well, there are basically two advantages to single-sex education. One applies to really all children, girls and boys of all ages. A second advantage we see primarily among kids in low-income areas. But the first advantage, the most broad advantage of single-sex education, is that it gives you the power to break down gender stereotypes. For example, a study from the University of Virginia published 9 months ago found that boys who attended single-sex schools, all-boys schools, were more than twice as likely to study subjects such as art, music, foreign languages, compared to boys of comparable ability attending comparable co-ed schools. And the largest study ever done, looking at 370,000 students by the National Foundation for Educational Research, found that girls who attend all-girls schools are about 50% more likely to study subjects like computer science, advanced math, and physics than are girls attending co-ed schools. That study was at the high school level. You look at the kindergarten, early elementary level, very exciting work by Margaret Olofsdottir found that boys in all-boys kindergartens are much more likely to spend time drawing with crayons or experimenting with simple sewing, whereas boys in co-ed classrooms will tell you that's for girls.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first advantage of single-sex education, that you can break down gender stereotypes.
Well, given the paucity of research that both Mr. Marcus and David Sadker have mentioned, might it not be a good idea to do some demonstration projects and see what goes on before going ahead with the administration's scale of proposal?
Well, in the Department of Education's preamble to these new regulations, they explained that their purpose was to determine what was the intention of the Title IX statute. The intention of the Title IX statute was to equalize educational opportunity. The architects of that statute, Senator Birchbaugh of Indiana and Congresswoman Edith Green of Oregon, never intended to outlaw single-sex schools. They wanted to equalize opportunity. Now, the regulators at the old Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, who went to write the regulations in the mid-70s, looked around at what was going on in America, and there I agree completely with Professor Sadker, that back in the early 70s and before that, the boys were sent to woodworking and the girls were sent to home ec.
Right.
You had this narrowing of educational opportunity. And so the regulators said, we're not going to permit that. We're not going to allow single-sex classrooms. Nowadays, though, we understand that you can use single-sex classrooms to expand educational opportunity. And in this country, we've got a real problem with that. You know, the National Center for Research on Women, NCRW, published a study recently showing that the involvement of girls in computer science has been dropping steadily for the last 20 years. It peaked in 1984, and it's been plummeting ever since. Last year, if you look at the high school students who took the AP exam in computer science, 90% of them were boys. The involvement of girls in computer science is dropping. Likewise, the involvement of boys in foreign languages is dropping. I've been in co-ed public schools where you walk into the AP French class and you don't see a boy.
Let's get an email in. This is from Carol Lawrence. I went to a single-sex school in Jamaica. While it does well with having people concentrate more on their schoolwork, the social experience was lacking. I really didn't know how to deal with the opposite sex till late in life. To be honest, I never would send my child to one of these schools. She's now 8 years old and can relate to the opposite sex so well.
Yeah, you know, that's a common concern people have, and it's certainly understandable. How are girls and boys going to learn to get along in any sense if they are in school only with girls boys with boys? Catherine Sanders studied that. She looked at 280 college freshmen, half of them from single-sex schools and half from co-ed schools, and she found, to her surprise, that the kids who had attended the single-sex high schools were actually more likely to have gone out on dates than the kids who attended co-ed schools. When you probe a little more deeply, though, what you find is that boys and girls today at co-ed schools don't date much anymore. They hook up. Now, this is a radio program. We don't want to get too detailed about the difference between dating and hooking up, but basically dating means you're in an ongoing romantic relationship, and hooking up means you're physically intimate, with the understanding that there is no ongoing romantic relationship. Kids at single-sex schools still date. Kids at co-ed schools are hooking up. That's what the evidence suggests. And I submit that dating is certainly no more harmful than hooking up.
All right, Dr. Saxa, would you stay with us as well? We'll get back to both of you and both to you and David Sadker in a few minutes. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And joining us now is someone who works every day in a single-sex setting. Winifred Todd is principal of the Thurgood Marshall Elementary School in Seattle, Washington. Their K through 5 classes have been sexually separated for 3 years. Ms. Todd joins us on the phone from her office in Seattle, and it's good of you to be with us today.
Thank you.
So why did your school decide to implement same-sex classes 3 years ago?
Well, it was pretty clear for us. Our school is very much focused on teaching, learning, and positive social development. What we needed to do was to ensure the success of our students by getting them more time on task. And by doing so, by separating kids for the majority of the day into gender-separate classrooms, we are trying to remove the distractions and to get kids more on task, because it is our belief that the more you're on task, the higher your you are producing in your academics.
Well, it's your belief. Do the results justify that belief?
Well, our results at our school absolutely justify that. We and the state of Washington are measured on the Washington Assessment of Student Learning, known as the WASL scores, and we've seen tremendous growth in our scores from 2000 to 2003.
Is that singularly appropriate, singularly attributed, rather, to single-sex classes?
I think that is definitely a major contribution in our success in our academics. Yes, I think it is.
Okay. At your school, boys and girls are in the same building. They have recess together, share the same teachers, eat lunch together, but the core academic classes are single sex. Why go that route and not have just two separate schools?
Well, on trying to take on something that large, it was easier for us as one school within a district to do that within our school rather than saying that we were going to create two separate schools. And also, we also give our kids time in which they do socialize together because, you know, you're right. There is the recess period where there are boys and girls out there for socialization, and also to know that in our literacy period, and that's our reading and writing block scheduling, we do have girls and boys are together for that. So it's not the entire day that the boys and girls are separate.
What reaction have you been having from parents and teachers?
Our parents absolutely love it. Like I said before, we really are sincere about our commitment to kids and our commitment to excellence, and that includes looking at what we can do differently. And so as we get rid of the distractions, as we continue to focus on teaching and learning, our test scores have steadily increased. We have got, from our parents, just a large support group. But remember, too, Seattle is a district of choice. And so children within our cluster choose to come to this school.
So self-selection to some degree.
Yes.
Okay. Winifred Todd, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Winifred Todd, principal of the Thurgood Marshall Elementary School, spoke to us from Seattle, Washington. And David Satker, we just have about 30 seconds left in this segment of the program, but a quick response. She's doing very well.
I think we're confusing a few things. I think she has a good school, and I don't know all the things going on in that school.
Mm-hmm.
But I think she has a good school going on there. The single sex may not be the key ingredient. There may be other things happening. I think single sex, there are things to learn from that. But I don't think we're learning them. And I don't think this proposal will allow us to learn them.
When we come back from a short break, we'll hear more from David Satker and from Dr. Leonard Sachs, who disagree on the benefits of same-sex education. The administration has proposed a relaxation of Title IX regulations that would allow more same-sex classes and more same-sex schools around the country. We're in a 45-day comment period. And we'll hear more of your comments, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or email us, TOTN@NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We're wrapping up our discussion about single-sex education. In a few minutes, we'll turn to a Bill Gates plan to get rid of spam. But first, let's go back to Dr. Leonard Sachs, Executive Director of the National Association for Single-Sex Public Education, and David Satker, a professor of education at American University. And we have a time for a little bit from each of you gentlemen. I wanted to preface it with this email from, who wrote it? W.R. I went to an Australian boarding school for boys only. I feel I missed out on a lot, how to interact on a day-to-day basis with girls rather than regard them as exotic beings. My children went to are attending mixed-sex schools, and it genuinely delights me to see how well the two genders get on. From personal observation, I know that problems exist in boys-only schools as well. The more aggressive or assertive boys crowd out the shy boys because, or those who choose not to be assertive, both inside and outside the classroom. So, Dr. Sachs, it seems like there can be problems in same-sex schools or mixed-sex schools.
Sure, and single-sex schools may not be the best choice for every student. That's why we welcome the Department of Education's recommendation that this always be optional. But I want to respond to a comment Professor Satker made, which I think confuses race and sex. He said, well, if you're going to segregate the genders, next you're going to segregate the races. You know, Janet Cassidy, professor at Louisiana State University, looked at 350 normal newborns and found that the girls could hear at birth substantially better than the boys could hear. Barbara Cohn-Wesson and her colleagues in Los Angeles looked at normal newborns, had the same finding. Girls at birth have a sense of hearing that is roughly an order of magnitude more sensitive than boys have, and that difference is very relevant to education. And we cite those studies on our website, singlesexschools.org. There are no such differences among the races. Blacks don't hear better than whites. Asians don't hear better than Hispanics. There are no educationally relevant differences between races, and hence no plausible justification for segregating them. But there are large, innate, hardwired differences between how girls and boys hear, how they see. And we cite these differences on our website. The second point I want to make is
very quickly, because
social justice. You know, Senator John Kerry, President George W. Bush, his father, Al Gore, all those men attended all-boys high schools. And as Senator Clinton said on the floor of the Senate, if rich people have this opportunity in our country, why should we prohibit it as a matter of law to people who don't have $20,000 a year to spend on single-sex education, because the benefits...
Dr. Sachs, I'm afraid to give time to David Satker. I'm going to have to cut you off.
I think if Dr. Sachs and I were working on single-sex schools, we could do a lot of constructive things together. I don't think these proposals do constructive things. This is an administration that has tried to cut back Title IX in athletics. This is an administration that has found non-traditional job training for women objectionable and cut the funding. This is an administration that wiped out gender equity training. And if you walk into America's schools today, and I actually have a doctoral student doing this, nobody knows what Title IX is. This administration is not Dr. Sachs. Dr. Sachs and I might have some constructive things to find. But when the administration that has been attacking Title IX and women's rights for 3 years comes out with this proposal, which endangers safeguards, I worry.
David Satker, thank you very much for being with us today. He's a professor of education at American University, co-author of Failing at Fairness. He joined us in Studio 3A. Dr. Leonard Sachs, thank you for your time today as well.
Thanks for inviting me.
Dr. Sachs is executive director of the National Association for Single-Sex Public Education. He was with us from his office in Montgomery County, Maryland.